What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 74, Grants Galore for March 26, 2014. This week, we are joined on Skype by Mr. Walter Doyle from DonorsChoose.org, in person by Ms. Stephanie Asherell from FundForTeachers.org, and Cindy Parmer from the Pasadena ISD Education Foundation. Each of these are places that I received grants from, and so I just really wanted to help other people by telling them about all these grant opportunities, and if we have time at the end, I'll talk about some of the many ones that I've received, but hopefully they can just fill up the time with all their wisdom and information. So, of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, and with me today is...
George.
Marlin.
Rita.
Brianna.
Jocelyn.
That's right. You'd say hello.
Oh, hey, I'm Stephanie.
Cindy.
Marissa.
Lorena.
All right. If you want to join us live almost every single Wednesday at 10 or 10:30, they've recently changed our bell schedule, so it kind of changes every week. You can do that on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And then there's links to everything there, so sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And if you're listening live, you can use hashtag TheSMB on Twitter, and Brianna should be able to see those comments and ask them of our guest. So without much further ado, so we can save plenty of time for our guests.
Can you introduce yourself? We're going to start with Ms. Parmer.
Okay. Yes, my name is Cindy Parmer, and I work with the Pasadena Independent School District here where you all go to school. My title for the district is Director of Community Relations, and with that job, I work as Executive Director for the Education Foundation, which is how I met Jeremy, and is where we give the mini grants to teachers.
Now, Ms. Cheryl.
Asherell.
Asherell. I'm sorry.
It's a hard one. It's okay.
Yeah.
My name is Stephanie Asherell. I'm with Fund for Teachers. We're a national organization based right here in Houston that offers teachers like Jeremy and Walter, apparently, the opportunity to apply for any kind of professional development opportunity, whether it's learning another language, attending a conference. They name it. Whatever they think they need to be a better teacher, we want to offer them the opportunity to do that.
Now, Mr. Doyle.
Yeah, definitely. My name is James Walter Doyle. I am the current director of teacher engagement for DonorsChoose.org. And DonorsChoose is a site where teachers can request materials they need for their classrooms, from class trips to guest speakers to basic essential needs like books and pens. And through crowdfunding, donors are empowered by these teachers' requests and can actually fund them in return for student feedback and thank you letters and really just a clear sense of what's happening in the classroom.
All right, so just a brief kind of history for me. I wrote my first grant when I was in Fort Bend, and that was through the Education Foundation. And then when I came here to Pasadena, which is now my seventh year here, I've written a whole bunch more, and that's where I've I went to Orlando for about 15 days with Fund for Teachers because there was a Kagan cooperative learning training that I went to. And then I think I did Education Foundation for some stuff when I was teaching biology. And, you know, there's been several through there, through the Education Foundation. And Donors Choose has done a lot. And I think the first one I wrote for Donors Choose was for an iPod because this is when I was first starting the idea of podcasting. And so I was like, well, a podcast, iPod, I think they go together. And so I got the iPod so the kids could listen to the podcast or we could view the podcast, but I still had a lot to learn about it. But there's been quite a few other grants from Donors Choose and the Education Foundation. And again, if we get a chance, I have those listed in the show notes if you care to look them up, but you can do that. But we'll talk about them as we go through. So,
can you tell us about your company or foundation?
The Pasadena ISD Education Foundation is a nonprofit organization, so that's a 501c3 organization, and it's made up of about 35 board members who are all community members who volunteer their time. Most of them are business leaders or sometimes retired school administrators, and they throughout the year fundraise through events. Such as the McDonald's Texas Invitational Basketball Tournament, which we have here on your campus. You've probably seen all the teams come and play in that tournament. And we have a Shining Stars Gala. We've had Dancing with the Principals. And just funds that are donated through private companies, industry, and then private donors. And all of those funds, all the proceeds go back into the classroom here in our district, Pasadena, for teacher mini grants. The teachers can apply for up to $5,000. It may be a classroom project. It could be a grade level. They could combine, you know, a grade level. It could even be a school-wide program. And so we've had great success since 2003, the inception of the foundation. We've given just around $1.5 million out to teachers in our district.
Very, very cool. And I usually have some of the big, large checks that y'all hand out hanging up right here, but one of them ripped, and so I just didn't have time to fix it. So normally I have that as decoration here for my podcast wall, but I forgot today. So
maybe we'll bring you a new one soon.
Hopefully. I filled out some more applications. So
okay.
All right, let's go ahead and go to Ms. Asherle. Same question.
Sure. So Fund for Teachers, again, is a national organization. We were started in 2001. And since then, we've awarded, well, this year we'll top out at 6,000 teachers from across the country. I think that this year we'll be at probably $22 million in teacher grants. So the money goes directly to the teacher. Essentially, we ask them, what do you need to be a better teacher? What do your students need? What are they excited about learning about? And so in Jeremy's case, he wanted to go to this conference in Florida. And so he's one of those 6,000 teachers who's received the benefit of planning their own professional development. We've had other teachers go to a total of 134 countries, all seven continents. We've sent three teachers to Antarctica. So these grants, you know, because they're driven by the teacher who knows exactly what's going on in the classroom and what their students need, they're literally transforming their classrooms and how students are learning. And I could spend all day telling you about all the awesome projects they do, and I know we're going to touch on a few of them later. But really, an awesome opportunity for teachers to take control of their own learning and their students' learning and really make a difference in their classroom and school communities.
All right, so you know how we had like the snowball fight over here and how sometimes we'll play those silly games where we do the formations and that stuff in this class? That's the stuff that I learned at that conference. So by filling out the application there, I was able to go there and learn some of those things to make y'all interactive, or where you do the round robins or the get-to-know-you questions or the little the flashcard things, whatever we call them, the quiz trade, you know, that kind of stuff. That's what I learned at that conference that I was able to go to through Fund for Teachers. So, all right, and Mr. Doyle.
Yeah, definitely. So DonorsChoose.org has been around since 2000. Charles Best, our founder and CEO, actually was a classroom teacher and was sitting in a teacher's lounge and didn't understand why he was having to spend so much of his own money for just basic things like notebooks and pencils, and there was just this lack of supplies in the classroom. So the idea was born there, and teachers since then, the last 14 years, have been a request really anything that they can make an impact with their students' lives on the site. And through different programs and through the generosity of multiple partners, we're going to be able to put about $58 million into classrooms this year. Nationwide, so in all 50 states, and have a larger representation. And before coming on board, I was a classroom teacher myself. I did Teach for America and was in New York City and Harlem for 7 years. And I found the site my very first year teaching because I literally had, like, you know, 13 chairs less than I needed to actually teach my full class. And so they were sitting on crates and all kinds of things. So once I had fulfilled those basic needs in my classroom, I was able to think outside the box and really push the level of creativity for my instruction, and took students to Africa, all over Europe, started a men's fitness program, a women's literature circle. We had all kinds of extracurricular activities, and it was all thanks to DonorsChoose.org and being able to request those materials and to really enhance my instruction as a teacher.
So through DonorsChoose.org, you took kids to Africa?
Yeah, we took a trip to Morocco. So we started a program about 6 years ago called Kids and Culture, and teachers are still operating it now. You can actually check it out at donorschoose.org/kidsandculture, the letter N. And it's teachers that want to teach this year-long curriculum about another country, and then through Explorica and EF and a couple other companies, they take a class trip abroad, and the students get really hands-on learning of what it is they were learning about all year.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. A lot of cool things. I'm sure they're glad to have you on board there at DonorsChoose.
Yeah, it's been great. It's my role didn't exist before I came on board, and so now I have the opportunity to really work with other teachers and to give them that sense of creativity and be able to push the envelope of their instruction, while also just giving them the right fundraising tools to actually be successful on our site and to get those essential needs in the classroom as well.
All right, so Stephanie or Cindy, neither of y'all were teachers before, correct? No? Okay. Just curious because he was a teacher and then kind of moved on from there. So,
what are some tips for people applying?
As far as the Education Foundation goes, we have workshops twice a year where applicants or potential applicants can come and actually go page by page through the application. And it's very simple. It's just a 3 or 4 page application. Gloria Gallegos is very good to go through that and give ideas on exactly, you can actually talk to her about your idea and maybe get some pointers as far as what to say, what not to say. We have guidelines that are found on our website that basically you need to look at before you ever even start the application to see, you know, what to do, what not to do. And just the simple things that are listed there, you know, you must have your signatures. You know, you don't include things that don't need to be included. So it's all spelled out pretty simple. Jeremy's kind of our poster child. He does a great job of writing those mini grants. And I think over the years, as the application has evolved, teachers have gotten better at writing. It's gotten harder. The scores have gotten higher every year from when we first started. But mainly just to go and look at those guidelines, use the guidelines, and then come to the workshop.
All right, so on that same note, obviously you're with Pasadena Education Foundation. Do you have any idea if or how many other school districts have an education foundation?
I would say Texas, probably the majority, and I don't have numbers for you. I'm sorry about that. But I would say probably more than half of the school districts in Texas have an education foundation. It's a growing movement just because of the lack of funding, of course, at the state level. I would think it's probably, and you may be able to speak to that just because of your national exposure. And you know, you came from Fort Bend. They had one there.
Right.
But I would think at least 60% of our school district in Texas have an education foundation. And more I'm finding in our area, the ones that don't are calling to say, we're starting one. We're, you know, I'm in a group that's in the Houston area, and every district in the surrounding area, they're members of our group. So it's very needed. I mean, you know, it's needed, and it's a movement that it's not going away anytime soon, put it that way.
Gotcha. Mr. Doyle, do you have any input on the New York area Education Foundation status?
I don't actually have input on the foundation. I never worked with them directly. I know that, like, a couple of the teachers were applying just for basic kind of classroom projects, or if they wanted to continue a lesson and kind of take it to the next level, that some of those grants were like, kind of the right thing. I know a lot of science teachers really dive into that area because they can actually kind of price out what an experiment would look like and see long-term results and then go to the foundation for those materials and supplies.
So some of them do have education foundations there in New York as well?
Yeah, no, there definitely is education foundations. I just never myself kind of got involved with one. I think the closest I knew of a teacher actually getting involved with the foundation was through forensics. There was a forensics project and bringing that as part of the curriculum into the classroom. So now that it's like a full-time subject that they can actually tap into.
Very, very interesting. When I was teaching biology, I actually did some forensic type stuff because you could do a lot of anatomy and hypothesis and that kind of stuff with forensics. So it's really pretty cool. And, you know, you get to watch some CSI type videos that the kids always enjoy too. So
I always found myself, for whatever reason, I taught on the science floor, even though I was an English teacher, and all my colleagues that I was close with were all science teachers. I felt like I really missed out. I mean, although Shakespeare is great, I thought science is always the coolest thing.
Or when you hear the teacher down the hall making an explosion and you run out in the hallway.
Yeah, I don't get any of that with poetry slam, so I was always jealous.
All right, so Stephanie, do you have any idea about the education foundations throughout the nation?
Particularly in Houston, we work with 40 districts, as far north as Magnolia and as south as Galveston. And I can say with confidence probably more than half of them have education foundations associated with their districts. Nationally, we're seeing more small cities having their own foundations that work directly with the school districts. Some cities only have one district. Houston is pretty unique that within such a large geographic region, there's multiple districts. But the smaller cities, I'm seeing more of a community-based foundation that works directly with the districts.
All right. So it more or less applies across the board. So going back to the question, some tips for applying for the Fund for Teachers grant. What you got?
Sure. Really piggybacking off of what Cindy said, it's all about research. You need to read, and not even just a Fund for Teachers grant, but if your students are applying for scholarships or any kind of grant or opportunity like Donors Choose or through the Pasadena ISD Foundation, it's all about the research. Every little bit of information that a foundation provides to you isn't just for their own benefit. It's really for the benefit of the applicant. And so read everything you can get your hands on. If you see names of other grant applicants or scholarship winners that you know, reach out to them. Ask them for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help, either of the foundation or anything that you're applying for. But particularly at Fund for Teachers, we work on a person-to-person level. I'm probably the only person that Jeremy's known and worked with there because I make myself available to him to help him or any of our teachers with their grant applications, any questions they have about the process. And I think that most foundations work like that, and they really want to help the applicants through the process. So research, take your time, and always ask for help would probably be the best tips I could give you.
All right, so same question for you, Mr. Doyle.
Yeah, so I think Donors Choose is a great, because for anyone that has not had any experience before with writing a grant, we try to make it as straightforward as possible, and it's kind of like a micro a grant in a sense. So it's great practice for anyone that's going on to write these larger grants like Fund for Teachers or anything from a foundation perspective. But kind of piggybacking off everything they said, it's still necessary to do the research to really know what materials it is you're looking to request, but also how you're going to use those materials. That's really what donors are the most motivated and captivated by, is seeing how you're going to take that piece of instructional material and bring it to your students, and then what that's going to look like. The writing process is usually just about four paragraphs, so being able to really capture that in a concise, short way that's going to capture a donor's attention is really important for teachers. I really recommend DonorsChoose.org for any teacher that has never, ever thought of a grant process at all and sometimes thinks it's so daunting, because when they get one under their belt, they really realize how simple it is and how straightforward it is, because it's really just putting what they do every day into words and then starting to look at these larger grants like Fund for Teachers and these foundation grants, because those are the ones that have really made a huge, huge impact for me in my teaching career, because they were able to actually cultivate my professional development, whereas Donors Choose, we're looking to really cultivate the students through materials. So I think that there's a great segue to be offered here.
All right, so with Donors Choose, each section, it has a word limit. Do you think it makes any difference if it has 500 characters when the limit is 500, or if it has 100 characters or whatever it is? So on the application, do you think the more filling of that the requirements is better or not so good?
I think it goes back to the same things. We always told our students that more is not always necessarily better. It's really about the content, and it's really about what it is you're saying. If you're just offering filler because you think that the length of your proposal is going to make it, more likely to be funded, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think donors are looking to really understand who you are as an instructor and what you're trying to achieve in your classroom. And if you can do that in 100 words and captivate their attention in a short period of time, they're just going to be as likely, if not more likely, to fund that project.
Okay, so the other two, on the same deal, whenever I have people here ask me about Education Foundation grants or Funded for Teachers or Donor Choose, they always say, some of them, I read them and I'm like, are you sure you went to high school and college and graduated? Because, the grammar, the thought process is just not complete. And I'm like, you really need to sell these people because they have no idea what you're doing. You need to explain everything and sell them. Do you find that to be true, that the people reading these grants aren't going to know if I write tax or star or if I write whatever it is I went to Florida for, the Kagan, if I just wrote that stuff, I need to explain that? Or do I need to keep it concise? Is that going to be better?
Well, I think for us, the starting process, the readers are actually, they are educators, and they may understand some of that, the buzzwords of education. But at the same time, I think it needs to be simple, because eventually it hits when it comes to the committee, who are lay people, they're business people. And the first thing they're going to read is that 100-word synopsis that you've presented at the beginning. And it may, if they don't really bite on that, if they don't like that, they're not going to read any further. They may say, not loving that, and go to the next one. So that's the hook. That's where you need to get them, is in that 100-word synopsis at the beginning. And you need to stick to that. And you're right, the buzzwords, you know, they don't know what those are. The acronyms, they don't know what those are. They don't care about that. It really, what I tell them is, you need to state the need. The need is what is the most important. They know that, they know our demographics, they know our district. They just need to know what you need, and that's where you're coming from. And that's what I try to explain, exactly what you said. And then also, to your point, is to say, you know, keep it simple. You know, you don't have to flower it up. Just keep it simple, and from there they should be able to, you know, that we're all adults. But like you said, in English, it's that eighth grade level. Just keep it there, and people can all understand.
I think the advice I give all of our grant applicants is just like Cindy said: keep it simple, and sometimes more is just more. You need to obviously have the detail to explain why you're requesting whatever the grant is that you're asking for, whether it's something very short like Donors Choose, or it's something a little more lengthy like Fund for Teachers. But keep in mind who's reading your proposal. Most foundations will give you a little bit of insight into who's actually choosing the grant awards. And so at Fund for Teachers, our committees are made up of a community of people, so people who are in education, people who may be from the business world, but then also people who are just generally interested in what's going on in education. And so they need to understand what you're talking about, and never assume that anyone knows everything about what you're asking for. Particularly when you get down to subjects like biology, science, something that's just not that person's interest or what they study, they need help understanding. So just never assume, but keep it as simple as possible.
What are some things you should not do?
Well, going back to the guidelines that I talked about earlier, it really, stick to those guidelines, and they're very simple. It's, you know, don't forget to get your signatures, because sadly to say, you know, don't be late. Some of those easy things that, you know, you learned that in school, you know, simple stuff that as adults we still have the same rules. I mean, and, you know, sorry to say that sometimes people come in, you know, the next morning and sorry this got buried on the principal's desk. We can't take it. I hate doing that, because it could have been a very well-written grant, but, you know, it has to be a rule. There has to be a line that you draw. So
I've been victim of that one time.
I
just set the calendar wrong or something. It was completely my fault. And I'm like, you know what? I understand. It is the way it is. So I turned it in the next time, and I'm pretty sure I got it when I turned it in, but it was 6 months later or whatever. So
yeah, see, and I hate it, because you have to do that to people. But you have to have a draw. You have to have a line. So
I think I would say, it, just like Cindy says, you have to read the guidelines, review what all the rules are. But really, at a more basic level, take your time. Don't wait till the last minute to do any grant application, whether it's Fund for Teachers or the foundations. If you give yourself more time, you can get that research done. You're not stressed out at the last minute. I think another one of the kind of bigger mistakes that people make when applying for any grant is they're afraid. They're scared to ask questions. They're afraid to ask for help. That is what our job is. Our job at Foundations is to help you and really work to the benefit of the applicant. So take your time, don't rush on things, and always ask for help. Say that can help you avoid many of the most common pitfalls.
All right, Mr. Doyle, what are some things you should avoid with Donors Choose?
Yeah, I think one thing that a lot of teachers will do their first time coming through is they will they have all these great ideas and these things they want to request. They try to pile them all into one project, and it ends up being the lofty project. We try to control that by saying that for the first project, you can only request up to, I think, $2,000 in materials. And we don't do that because we don't think that that's all the money that a classroom should have. We do that because we want to make sure teachers are successful and get used to our model, used to kind of reaching out to their friends and family and understanding what the feedback process looks like. So with that, I would just say to keep it concise. Don't ask for everything at once. Don't try to confuse your donors by asking for multiple projects within the same grant. The nice thing about DonorsChoose.org is that you can have more than one grant up at a time. Teachers can request, you know, a project that is going to be for an after-school program and then have a separate project for just books for a classroom library and such. And keeping it small and really kind of having your focus very much on point really increases the success rate, and teachers find that their projects are funded in a lot shorter period of time. They're not waiting around 3 to 4 months for that project to be funded. They're seeing success within the first 2 to 3 weeks.
All right, so who is eligible to apply for Donors Choose?
So DonorsChoose.org is available for all public school teachers. And so that can be, you know, Department of Ed or charter, and all the way from pre-kindergarten and all the way up through 12th grade. As long as they're in front of students more than 50% of the time, they are eligible.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Because, you know, as an athletic trainer, some athletic trainers are full-time teachers and athletic trainers. Some are contracted through the hospital and only work, you know, like from 10 o'clock till the end of practice and that kind of thing. And so do you have to be in a formal classroom, or if I have student athletic trainers in my athletic periods, does that count as well?
It has to. So it really comes down to the percentage of time they're in front of students and what their job description is. Guidance counselors, they're obviously with the students all the time. They don't have a formal classroom, but they can request materials because that's their primary focus is working with students.
Okay. Very cool. Stephanie?
Sure. So Fund for Teachers grants are available to all U.S. pre-K through 12th grade teachers in public, private, and charter schools. They have to spend at least 50% of their time in the classroom or classroom-like setting, much like Donors Choose. They have to have at least 3 years teaching experience and the intent to return to the classroom in the consecutive school year.
Okay, so Donors Choose, you don't have to have 3 years experience, correct?
Nope, you can be a first-year teacher.
Okay, so if you're first year, you go there, and then like Mr. Doyle said, get your fee started and move to Fund for Teachers or your Education Foundation. Ms. Parmer?
Our grants are open to all Pasadena ISD educators, and that includes classroom teachers, and then administrators who would be in curriculum instruction and anyone involved with student learning.
Again, the focus of the Education Foundation is to enhance the education or the experience for the students.
Right, so. Classroom. Right, we don't fund continuing learning or continuing ed for teachers or educators. It's basically classroom learning or campus projects.
I got you. So I've had some coaches ask me, you know, do you think we could get one for, like, just say a pitching machine or something like that that's going to help the kids hit better? Is that something that Education Foundation might or might not fund?
We've had, we don't turn those away. We've had some come in from the athletic departments, and they have funded some for the basketball programs. A lot of times that depends on the budget year and the mindset of the administration. Sometimes when things are really tight and the school can't afford, you know, they may need to upgrade things that can't be afforded through the school budget, then they will approve those types of things. So we don't ever turn away those types because they're still educators.
All right, and obviously I don't think pitching machines fall into Fund for Teachers, right?
we prefer to fund an actual experience for the teachers, going somewhere, learning something over the summer. If a pitching machine played into what you went to learn, then that's something that we could include in your grant. But those are, whenever you ask for something like technology, those kind of large classroom purchases like a pitching machine or gym purchases, those you really have to explain to the selection committee as to why it's really a vital part of your grant proposal. But not on its own, but as part of a total learning experience, we could do something like that.
All right, so Mr. Doyle, pitching machines?
I think, in terms of, you can definitely, request whatever it is you need, and as long as you can justify it back to classroom instruction. So I think, you know, something like a pitching machine, especially if it's for an athletic instructor, that makes sense. That's a piece of equipment that is going to actually benefit your students. And I don't know. We have a couple of vendors that work specifically with athletic materials. So if it wasn't available on that for whatever reason as a vendor, you could do a special request, find the exact pitching machine that you wanted, and then submit that as a special request and have it funded.
All right. So I know when I went on my fund for teachers, like Stephanie was saying, you know, if I needed a video camera to videotape my experiences or a digital camera or something, then I could have put that in there as part of what I needed to bring that back to the classroom. And so I don't know how I would justify a pitching machine or a golf cart, but there are other things that may work with the experience there or allow me to bring that back home to the students. So very cool.
What is one of your favorite stories from a grant recipient?
For me, you know, I saw that question, and that we love to see, the fruits of labor. I mean, our board, I try to bring reports to them at every board meeting of different grants. And in fact, I think, Jeremy's going to come to our May meeting and give a report on some of the work that you guys are doing. But one that comes to mind just off the top of my head is, I think it was at Memorial High School, or maybe it might have been Dobie. They had built a pipe organ, and I can't tell you what it was from. It was I think it was a biology class, and that was one of those. What we like to see, and part of the Education Foundation's mission is not only do they plant the seed there in the classroom from our monies, but then they build relationships, and it grows further and further, and they build partnerships. And from that pipe organ that they built with our funds, they also built a partnership with Toyota. And it grew and grew, and it became a couple-year-long project. The end result is they took that organ to a couple of different venues and actually played it. One was a cathedral down in downtown Houston and had a concert. They went to New York. So that's the type of project that, you know, it starts out small and the seed grows. So, you know, that's one that stands out to me.
Well, with about 6,000 grant recipients, it's really hard to narrow it down, but I thought, based on your audience, I'd pull a few kind of sports-related examples. And one of my very favorites was actually a science teacher who kayaked the length of the Mississippi River over the summer to collect water samples for his classroom that his students could then test right there on their own school campus. And then he happened to teach in Chicago, and so then they started going to their own local rivers and waterways and collecting water samples there. We've sent lots of teachers to the Olympics to study the history, get to know some of the Olympians themselves and what they could bring back in their sports classrooms or sports-related instruction. We had a team of teachers who were special education teachers who went to the Paralympics and brought back a lot of the activities that were actual competition activities for their students to do, and they put on their own Paralympics event at school. And then probably one I think your students will really think is cool is last year a teacher from Chattanooga, Tennessee, actually skydived with a GoPro camera on his head to take back that data that he collected while skydiving to his physics classroom. So just a few of the kind of sports-related ones, but there's so many, and all the teachers across the country are just so invested in teaching better and having their students have a real dynamic learning experience that you would be amazed at the kind of projects that they come up with that I could never do them enough justice here, but those are just a few of my favorite.
Very cool. I'm going to have to come back to the Olympic thing here in a second. Mr. Doyle.
Yeah, I kind of picking up that there's been so many exciting projects, you know, funded throughout the years and just ones that I think your students would find interesting in terms of athletic equipment. We've had a lot of teachers thinking outside the box in terms of ways to get students moving. So we've seen requests for pogo sticks, for pogo stick instruction, for unicycles, to have a class for that. We had one teacher that basically wanted to put on a full musical theater production. He was the football coach, and he wanted his entire football team. They were going to be the cast because he wanted them in the off season actually continuously be nimble, essentially, and to kind of be moving. So he made them put on a production of like Oliver, I think, or something like that, and had the entire thing funded through that. And he had never directed a musical in his life, so part of it was like bringing in someone that had that experience. And the football team did a musical, which I thought was really exciting. And then kind of steering away from the idea of athletics, but just one of my favorite projects that I've been working on this year is the OpenROV, which is basically an open source underwater robot that we have 50 teachers requesting for the first time and working with the Paul Allen Foundation. And these teachers are exploring with their students sunken ships and lakes. They're looking at fish populations. They're diving into this problem with sea stars dying off and taking samples. And these are just 10th grade classrooms that are actually able to build a robot from scratch and then actually do some underwater exploration 100 meters deep where divers can't even go. So it's been really exciting to see how far teachers are able to push their students with a grant.
All right, so I can really picture our football team doing a musical here. I'm going to start working on that.
There you go.
They do some really cool stuff, and actually our football coach or our weight room coordinator has requested some donors choose stuff, in part because, you know, he hasn't written one before, but he wrote that for donors choose for like a digital camera because he was also writing one for the Education Foundation for the after school program where they do Eagle Elite, which is a fitness program open for the entire campus. And it's kind of like CrossFit, but you don't have to pay the $90 a month or whatever it is. And it's also here focused and for the students. And so my question there is, Cindy, do you think that donors choose plays an important part? Like if I wrote, you know, donors choose funded, gave me a digital camera, does that play into the grant decision for Education Foundation?
It's a matching, it could be considered the matching fund. You know, that's the component, one of the right components of your grant. Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it, because if the readers see and if the committee sees that you're already your project is underway or you've already started that initiative through another source, then I think that there's leverage there, and that does help in the scoring process as well as in the mindset to know that this is something that they really want to do and that the school is invested in.
All right, Stephanie, you think that things like that play into fund for teachers at all?
I think anytime that you can express to a selection committee reader through your narrative that you have been doing something already, whether it's applying for a small grant through your own community foundation or through something like Donors Choose, if it shows that you're already willing to put the effort in to get a project going that you don't really have a ton of support for already, it says a lot to the reader. It says that this teacher is really determined to make this happen and dedicated to the project, and I think that means a lot to most selection committee members and funders. But also just for teachers in general, and I think Mr. Doyle kind of alluded to this earlier, but grants are like the gateway thing for teachers. You apply for one, and then you're so pumped up that you want to get another one. And we actually hear a lot that teachers will apply for our grants, which are about $5,000 for an individual or $10,000 for a team, that while that's a lot of money, that's still not enough money to help teachers implement their projects in the classroom. So the next logical step is go to Donors Choose. Or I did this thing in my classroom with money from Donors Choose, and now I need to go where I got this idea and learn more about it. And so it kind of works both ways. Mm-hmm. But definitely a great, great kind of stuff to include in any grant that you're writing.
Very cool. So kind of working different angles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I do the same thing with our mini grants. A lot of times, you know, we get twice as many as we have the monies to fund each semester. And so sometimes there's great ideas that just we don't have the money. So I'll suggest to them to go to one of you guys and see if there's something there for them.
Mm-hmm. And then before, we were talking before, and Cindy was just telling me, you know, all the different contacts she has. And so she's like, if you ever need guests or anything like that. So it's really cool just to see, to know you and to be, you're such a big part of the community here that, you know, I can definitely be involved there and use you as a resource. Mm-hmm. Like you said, like both of you, actually all three of you said, you know, use the people here. We're saying, let us help you. So,
right.
All right, Stephanie, I do have questions about the Olympics.
Sure.
one of the things I'm kind of planning on doing is I have a buddy who lives in Asia, mm-hmm. and right around him is an Olympic training center. And So y'all have actually sent people to the Olympics, like they've written a grant, hey, I want to go to the Summer Olympics to see the events, to be part of the sports medicine team, or to observe the sports medicine team, that kind of thing?
Yes. The last Summer Olympics, I think we sent about 4 independent teachers from different parts of the country to the Olympics with their own sort of goals. Some people want to know more about the Olympic history. So how did the Olympics start? How do you get to the point we are today? How did the kinds of events and the sports that are portrayed or shown there, how did they get there? Where did those come from? So more of a historical viewpoint. Then you have the teacher who works directly with the athletes or athletic training on their own campus, and they want to know, what does it take to be an Olympian? And so really getting the opportunity to interview the Olympians that are there, and find out, what did you do to get to this point? What's the drive? What can I bring back to my students to let them know these are the kind of behaviors you need to model to become an Olympian, or really just encourage their athletes to perform better, better, higher, stronger. I think that's the motto. They each have their own different goals and going, but the Olympics are definitely a unifier for a lot of our athletic teachers.
Very cool. With the Fund for Teachers, the money has to be spent, or the trip has to be done basically between June 1st and August 15th or whatever it is, right?
It has to take place during your summer break, so the last day of school to the first day of school, that's fair game. If there's a project that absolutely cannot happen during the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to steal my idea for Donors Choose, or for
an extra one for my desk while you're at it.
Here you go. Yeah. Or maybe I'll get a couple different ones and we'll kind of experiment with which one we like best. So it's even another added deal there. Mm-hmm. All right.
What is something we can do to help you out here on the SMB?
Well, if you're an educator, apply. I mean, you know, the greatest benefit, or I guess the greatest satisfaction that our board members and our donors get is being able to see their money put to action. And so go ahead and apply for those grants, because the money is there. And then anyone and everyone can get involved, and that includes students, parents, community members, by donating. It's not necessarily monetarily. It could be through your resources or through your time. When the McDonald's Texas Invitational comes around, you guys can volunteer your time. So just get involved. Go to the district website and look at the Education Foundation's website. There's all kinds of events and things that are fun. Once you get there, bring your friends out and get involved.
All right.
A shameless Fund for Teachers plug. Apply October 1st this year. The grant deadline will be January 30th for all you teachers out there who are interested in applying. Educators in general, step it up. You're the poorest consumers of the opportunities available to you, and there are so many great grant opportunities, small grants, big grants, even, you know, something as simple, or what you think is simple, and you just go buy it yourself. Somebody else will pay for it for you, so take advantage of all those opportunities. Students, encourage your teachers to do something for themselves. They do everything for you every day, and it may not seem like it, but they are doing everything for you, and everything they ask of you. If you know about a grant or an opportunity you've heard about by, like, listening to this program or something else that maybe another one of your teachers did, tell your favorite teacher, tell any teacher to do something for themselves, whether it's the grant right here in Pasadena, or if it's something like Fund for Teachers or something like Donors Choose. Help them help themselves, because they really deserve it.
And Mr. Doyle.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, apply on DonorsChoose.org, but also just spread the word. A lot of teachers have had great success on DonorsChoose.org, and other teachers will pass by that classroom and they're just kind of like dumbfounded, like, oh my gosh, every one of your students has an iPad, or where did you get that smart board? And teachers kind of forget to actually pay it forward and just help other teachers get registered and involved on the site. I think that there's something daunting about grants for some teachers, especially for ones that are just used to traditional formats. And so they know that they could use more in their classroom, but they're just kind of anxious about how about to get that material. So if you are a teacher that's had success on DonorsChoose.org, reach out to one of your colleagues, help them get registered, and help them post that first project, because really, you all service the same students. You're going to make an impact from wall to wall within your school, and that's really ideally what we want to do. We want to make an impact in schools, not just one classroom.
All right. Yeah, I feel like I agree that, I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, all right, I just got awarded a grant. If I can help you, just let me know. With our home ec teacher, I don't know if that's the right word anymore, consumer and family science, food science, something like that. We just wrote a grant for the Education Foundation for, is this okay to say? Is this
yeah.
a conflict of interest? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I just wrote a grant for the Kitchen Ninja, the blenders, because, you know, they have some aging equipment, but there's a lot of things that they can do with that. But it was just the fact that I basically wrote the grant and then took her input and changed it that she got it done. And I don't know if she was too busy. She just felt overwhelmed. But I think it's hard for some people. They don't know where to start. And so I even send out copies of mine. I'm like, here, look, this is what I've done. See if that helps you. Here's what I've done. See if that helps you. And so I think what you guys are saying is good. Just want to ask for help, but then go for it, do it. And then if you fail, then try again the next time. So.
I mean, something we always used to tell our students is that you should take time up front to save yourself time later on. And I think that for a lot of teachers, they don't understand that it's going to take a little bit of time to write a grant, but it's going to save you a tremendous more amount of time in terms of what you're actually trying to accomplish in the classroom when you have the right resources in front of you.
I agree. All right. So on that note, we're going to let the kids go to lunch. If you guys will just hang on a second, we'll see if there's any more questions, and then I can let y'all go. So I'm going to step away and turn the sound stuff down, so if you guys will just hang on. So you got to tell them bye.
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 Thank you
for coming. Thank
you. Have a good lunch.
Thank you.
Here we are. We're going to come back for just a second after the kids have gone. And this is the one question I really should have asked at the beginning is, since we're kind of writing essays to get stuff, do these things apply at all to scholarships for these students, which I should ask while they were sitting here, but we just didn't get to it. What are your thoughts on the advice that you've given today applying for student scholarships?
As far as the writing aspect?
Yeah, well, just some of the tips of things that we've done that, you know, you're saying do or don't do, you know, avoid or...
Oh, yeah, it's in terms of applying for scholarships. Well, I think, the same things can apply. Read the instructions. That's the biggest thing. We were talking earlier about, I have two girls in college myself now, and we didn't do a lot of scholarships, but I mean, just the application process and, the essay process, keep it simple and remember who your audience is. And scholarships, there's a lot of, just like grants, there's a lot of scholarships out there that remain untouched because people don't take that time. And I think it's, like you said, a lot of people, it's the fear of the unknown. It's, you know, just that procrastination, pick it up and dive into it. My advice would be just to try it, because once you get into it, they're really pretty simple. And there's a lot, even locally through, you know, our civic clubs. There's one with the Athletic Hall of Fame right now that is due today at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. So, my advice would be just for them to keep it simple and straight and to the point and give an insight to who they are, because that's exactly, the readers are always wanting to see, you know, who the student is and a little bit more what would make this applicant different from the next person, I think.
And I think one thing I really like about the Education Foundation is that you say, if I am not awarded, then I get a grade sheet. Well, even if I am, I get a grade sheet on, you know, it was really good in this, but really bad in this area. And so I know if I'm going to reapply with the same thing, then what I need to change, what I need to look for, what I need to adjust. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if scholarships had that same thing, it would be really good, but, you know,
yeah,
they might not. So
just some pointers on what to do next time. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes we give back the grade sheet, and I get the phone call that says, well, I got a high grade, and it says that they recommend that it got funded, but I didn't get funded. And we say yes, that's because we didn't have enough funds. I mean, sometimes, you know, like I said, there's so many good writers and great ideas, but there's not enough funds. So,
all right, Stephanie, your thoughts on scholarship?
I think that they're very similar to grants, and I hope that they took away from some of my comments that I was directing at them about, you know, research. That's just as important with scholarships. You know, we hear, I guess I'm not that far out of high school, but I hear, we've always heard about all these great and unique opportunities. And if kids today would just take a little more time to do the research, maybe that 5 minutes you spent on Facebook, 5 minutes could be looking for grants. And it's almost like a rabbit hole that you could go down. You could spend a lot of time just doing the research. And there's so much out there that's untapped. So mm-hmm. it's really the same. It's research, 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 and always ask for help.
All right, Mr. Dole.
Yeah, I think it's really about finding that hook to bring in your audience and captivating them from the very beginning. With attention spans kind of depleting as they are with every generation, you want to be able to grab whoever is going to be reading that piece of information from the very beginning in 2 to 3 sentences. It's going to tell them you know, who you are and what your approach is and what it is you're going to accomplish in the next couple paragraphs to set them up successfully. And I think that's the same for a grant. Whoever's reading it, they want to know briefly what it is they're going to be funding or helping you solve as an educator within the first couple sentences. And not a whole lot of filler, not a lot of background. Just jump right in and then take the rest of this paragraph to really flesh out that idea. And it's if for anyone that's new to the process, whether it's a student writing a scholarship application or even a teacher writing a grant, it's always helpful to have as many eyes on it as possible for insight and feedback. And you really have to be okay within yourself and comfortable with other people looking at your writing and offering that feedback. And taking it as constructive criticism and hopefully honing in on your craft and getting better and better with time.
I'm going to go ahead and take your follow your lead there and give a shameless plug for my wife, because I write the grants, but she does really like the making sense of it. Because, you know, when I write it, it makes perfect sense to me. I understand it, but then she's reading it from what you guys would be doing, reading the, you know, from the other end. And so she's the one that really goes in there and says, all right, you need to change this, this, and this, and plus you spell the wrong every single time or something like that.
So we can really thank your wife for all your success.
Yeah. Exactly. I think I've written two without her, but the other 15 or whatever it is, it's because she's done a lot of editing. So, yes. So
awesome.
So she needs to go on those trips with you.
Exactly.
She's going to the Olympics. That's it.
that's what I'm looking for. So I know that Fund for Teachers used to be every 5 years you could apply, but now it's every 3. So if I was going on a trip this summer, then in 3 years I could go on another trip.
Yes, but if you're not awarded, apply as many, you know, apply every year. But if you are awarded, we do ask that you wait 3 years to apply again.
Gotcha. And then Cindy, with you, they can apply
every semester.
I've turned in this last time I was actually awarded 2 grants. So one was for stuff with this podcast, and one was for creating a CPR army, which where you have a whole bunch of mannequins and AEDs and stuff over here. And so I know with education foundations, again, you got to read the rules, but at least ours, you can as much as you want,
yeah,
as long as there's money and
right, you
get a high enough grade. So, mm-hmm. And then, Walter, you already, I always say Mr. Doyle because I'm not sure if it's James or Walter that you go by.
I'm one of those weird ones that goes by their middle name, but I go by Walter, but James is fine as well.
Right.
Or just Doyle, or as my students called me, D-Fresh. Like, I got a whole lot of nicknames, so it's fine.
So D-Fresh, I heard you saying earlier that you can have multiple donors choose projects. Is that something that is advisable, or?
It's really all about what you are comfortable managing in terms of time. Because there is a feedback component that's going to be required for each of those projects. Thank you letters and a teacher impact letter, as well as photos. We have teachers that are veterans now that are doing 5 projects at a time because they can really understand and handle the kind of the responsibility behind it. And then some teachers really just want to do 1 at a time, get that entire package done, and then move on to the next project. So every teacher kind of knows themselves best. Once you've had, you know, a couple projects funded, you feel like you have a good rhythm going on and you can kind of get some student think letters going at the same time for multiple projects and expand that reach.
I think for me, one of the best parts of Donors Choose is following you on Twitter, because I see where they have the matching fund, like the AED trainer that we recently bought that teaches our kids how to use the AED was partially funded or halfway funded through Chevron, because Chevron partnered with Donors Shoes. And so they, you know, as long as I had people halfway funded, then Chevron picked up the rest of the tab. But I wouldn't have known about that. I wouldn't have had pushed so hard at that one little point those couple weeks if I hadn't seen it on Twitter. So I think it's really cool. You guys do a really good job of partnering with some a lot of different people, and then also letting the people know about that. So
thanks.
So all right. Anybody else have anything? Any other tips, thoughts? Want to share any more stories? No? All right. Everybody's looking shy. So if you guys will give me just 1 second, I'll close it out here, and then I can tell everybody bye. So, all right. There are definitely people we want to continue to thank. Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society sponsors the CEU opportunities for athletic trainers, so they can actually get professional development hours for listening and being part of this podcast. Even if it doesn't apply directly to athletic training, it still applies to who they are as a person, as a teacher, as an educator, as somebody working with students. So that's really cool, and I thank you guys for being here today. The Pasadena ISD Education Foundation, and the face of that is Miss Cindy Parmer. They do a great job, and probably most of my grants are through the Education Foundation because it's the one that's closest to me. But you know, none of these are any less where I've done through the ATPE, which is Association of Texas Professional Educators, or Fund for Teachers, or Donors Choose. And again, I'm really excited about the opportunity, maybe going to the Olympics. That'll be really, really cool. So I'm going to work on that. And then, of course, taking my beautiful wife, Sarah, so since she does all the hard work anyways. And then my friend, my coworker, Derek Cook, he actually said he assigns the sports medicine broadcast as an assignment for his kids sometimes, where they'll go in and watch it and take notes, or you know, do some stuff about that. So because of the work that you guys are doing at Donors Choose and Education Foundation, I've been able to amass all this equipment and put together this show. And so, you know, I thank you. I know you can't see me looking at you. Oh, yeah, I think you can see me looking at you there. Something like that. So I thank you guys for everything you're doing, because, you know, Derek and his class are able to benefit from me talking to all these professionals because of all the work that you've done. So I really appreciate everything you're doing. And then maybe after I go to Asia, I'll go to a podcast conference, which is another thing I was thinking about, because they have one in Dallas next year, but or this summer. It's just I've already missed the deadline. So that's right. Lots of ideas. And so as I was saying before, I'm looking to do this over the summer. As you know, we've typically stopped over the summer because the students are gone, but I want to kind of continue this over the summer. So if you want to be a guest, if you have somebody that knows something they want to hear about, then you can send that to me. Again, all the ways you can contact me are on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So there's the Twitter, which is PHS Sports Med, Google Plus, which is Sports Medicine Broadcast, Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. You could email me if you really want to. I think my phone number's on the website there too. You can call me, but that's pretty much it. Almost every single Wednesday, we're live on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So for Jeremy, the Sports Medicine One crew, Mr. Doyle, Ms. Asherl, and Ms. Parmer, that's a wrap.